Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of Miami Town Ghost Talk. I'm Mike.
And this is Jeff.
You sounded unsure of that.
I was unsure of that. I started talking, and then I thought that I had a different thing that I would come in on and all, and I just lost control.
I thought you just forgot your name. But, yeah, we've got a great show lined up tonight. Tonight we have our guest is Christopher Moon and his little crew. That's also Dina Everling and Paulette Huff. I know Paulette is his mother and works with him in everything he does. And I think Dina is like a publicity manager or something like that for him. And what they do, Christopher Moon is an ITC researcher, also known as Ghostbox, and they also have a magazine called Haunted Times Magazine.
What does ITC stand for?
I don't know. Acronym? Something telephonic communication, I think.
Okay, you can keep going. That was all. Okay. I was wondering.
Okay, that's a good question for them. And then they also have another show on ASPRN called Haunted Times Radio on Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock. I had to really think about that. And that's about all they do. But they're cool people, and he's very... It's interesting to hear about the ghost box sessions and what he does, because the way he does it is more like to communicate with the dead, to communicate with a past loved one, like a medium or a psychic or whatever would do. And that's kind of the way he does it, not just as strictly research, paranormal investigation research, like if we were to go in with our investigation group. His is more directed to actually talk to someone and actually hear what they have to say since they've passed over, sort of thing.
So what exactly is a ghost box? Walk me through this again.
My understanding is it is a radio of sorts that scans through various stations, and using that frequency and using that frequency, the spirits can manipulate like the sounds or talk at that frequency, and you can hear it as it's flipping through, scanning through all the different stations. Or so, maybe it can control it. I'm not sure how that works.
So like the whole white noise thing where if you have the white noise going on, there's more, I guess, of a medium for the ghost to talk through.
I'm thinking that's part of it, yeah. I think it also has to just do with the radio waves, radio frequency type of thing. I'm not 100% sure.
So have you seen this work?
I watched a YouTube video of something he did at one of his classes. He has classes at like colleges and does... at different haunted locations and stuff, events. And I saw a YouTube video of him working this, and it was hard because of it being just a video. It's hard to really hear anything, but it's a fancy little setup.
So what I'm still not sure I understand exactly what's going on. They ask questions and there's actually answers that come through, or... They just listen, and there's voices that talk, or
remember the Frank's box that Caper uses?
Yeah, that never worked real well though.
It's like a glorified version of that. It's not just a little shack hack like what they use. It's a big black box connected to a laptop, a whole fancy setup. And it scans through, and you hear the radio stations, and you hear the static in between the stations, and then every so often you'll get a random voice that actually seems to answer a question that's been asked. And when that answer comes through, if it seems to answer the question, it seems like that's confirmation that that's then the spirits talking to them.
So is the voice that we're hearing, is that supposedly the ghost voice, or is that actually a radio voice that the ghost has somehow caused to go through the ghost box in order to answer a question? Like the ghost supposedly searches these radio waves going through the air, and it grabs the appropriate ones and throws it in there, or is it this actually the ghost voice?
That's a good question for them, but my understanding is it is actually the ghost's voice. It's the ghost communicating. But I could be wrong. It could be them manipulating the waves to make it say that or something like that. I don't know.
So is this like AM and FM radio stations? This is probably all better for them, but I don't
I
want to
think
seem
it's
like an
just
idiot when I'm
FM.
talking to the guests, do I?
I think it's FM.
But it's actual radio stations, so this is something that feasibly, once you get these voices, you can check all the radio stations out there at the time and see if there was actually someone
Theoretically.
saying that. And if not, it wouldn't pick up like a walkie-talkie type of thing, or I guess I'm trying to figure out how somebody came up with this idea for the ghost box in the first place. Were they
I'm not
listening
sure
to
I've ever
their?
truly believed it works either, and I'm not
Well, I didn't
sure
say
at
I don't
what
believe
point.
it works. I'm just saying I don't understand how it works. I'm sorry,
Right.
you were talking. I was just gonna throw that in there before.
No, I was trying to grasp at what you said. My whole thing is just I don't know how to tell whether or not the evidence is credible. Because, like you say, if you get a voice, you're going to get could be another radio station that just coincidentally seemed to answer the question. So I don't know how you differentiate between a radio station that's coincidental and actual spirit. How it actually works, I have no idea. I couldn't even answer that. Chris probably could, though.
So I guess I don't know. It seems like was somebody just listening to to static on the radio one day, and they heard a voice on that, or flipping through the radio stations, and then they decided to make this, because this is a generally accepted piece of equipment, right? Like more or less everybody in the field knows what it is, whether or not they agree with the verity of its findings or not, but they know what it is. It's a famous piece of equipment, and I guess I'm just not sure where that came from, like where the idea came from, and it seems kind of silly to suggest that somebody was there just listening to white noise on the radio and they heard something, but like is that the like I guess what I'm trying to say is, or I guess I've said a lot of things, but one of the things that I'm trying to get at is EVPs. Is it easier to get EVPs through when there's white noise in the background? Is that the general understanding?
I think that's the theory, yes, because it gives them more, gives the spirits more to work with, like more, aren't EVPs supposedly like they can manipulate the radio waves or something that cause it, the voice, sound like a voice,
So
something
it's
like that.
not so so even EVPs themselves, it's not I guess one of the theories is it's not so much that there's this actual voice coming through the recorder, it's the sounds, the ambient sounds are being somehow manipulated by the ghost in order to create the sounds that the ghost wants.
Right. That's the impression I always got. I don't know if that's right or not, but I was always under the impression it's not actually some ghost actually saying into the recorder, "My name is blah blah blah." My impression was always they're manipulating the frequencies, the waves, the whatever it is that you manipulate to make it sound like it's saying what they want it to say. But I could be way off and I could be crazy. I'm not real sure.
So do you know any stats or anything? Like if you take all the EVPs in the world and the ones that have this white noise in the background versus the ones that don't, or people who I guess go side by side or whatever and record with white noise and record without white noise, which one gets more EVPs? Is this something that's been studied?
I have no idea. In personal experience, I haven't tried it very often, I guess, but from what I've seen and researched and the few times I have tried it, I've seen it only make it worse because it's just so much background noise on the recorder when you're trying to listen.
There should be stats out there for ghost hunters. Like there should be these stats, all the investigations that they've been on, the ones that they've gotten Class A EVPs, Class B EVPs, Class C EVPs. And then,
but who would be the judge of what class each EVP is?
Well, there's a very strict guideline for them, isn't there? I was under the impression like a F5, F4, F3 tornado type of thing.
There's guidelines, but I don't know how strict they are. I mean, everyone's Class A definition seems to be a little different.
Well, I thought Class A had to be a voice that everyone who listens to it has no question about what it's saying.
Yeah, but I've heard much clearer Class A EVPs than others.
So there should be a Class A plus EVP?
Yes. I think it's a very broad Class A spans a lot of clarity, I guess you could say. Like, the not so clear, but you can still probably understand it all the way up to it sounds like you and me talking clear. I think you can range a very broad spectrum there. So depending on who you ask, some people may call that lower end of it Class B, and others still say it's in Class A. So I don't know how perfect.
So we shouldn't keep stats because we can't. Well, I'm just saying, if we had those stats out there, the different locations, we could have a clearer understanding of where these are going to be, and then tune it or zone in on the best places to go to get EVPs.
I agree. I think that would work, but I'm not sure how legitimate the stats would be.
Well, I'm not saying that they're 100% legitimate, but it's a starting place.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
I completely agree. And that would be a difficult job to do, to get all the different groups together and to figure out exactly what their stats are and how often they get them and all that stuff.
Well, maybe there should be a database, a nationwide database that all the ghost hunters can plug their stats into. You should put that together.
I think Web Guy would do better at that than me. I'm not good with databases.
Okay. Well, we should go to commercial and get these guys on the phone.
Yep. Sounds good to me. All right, everybody. You've been listening to Miami Town Ghost Talk on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Looking for something different in fundraising activities? Need to book a speaker for your Halloween event? Cincinnati Area Paranormal Existence Research provides free programs to the public. To see what programs we offer, check out our website at kafer.pararesearch.org or give us a call at 513-407-4242. Let KAFER help you with your next event.
Para Trinity Radio airs live every Saturday on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network. Join hosts Mike and Ellie Saturday, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at ASPRN.com. Sponsored by HostYourGhost.com. Para Trinity Radio.
Hi, this is James Willis, co-author of Weird Ohio and founder and director of The Ghosts of Ohio, and you are listening to Miami Town Ghost Talk. Enjoy.
And we're back. I was muted and I couldn't get to it fast enough. I apologize. But we are back, and we are going to be calling Christopher Moon, Dina Everling, and Paulette Huff And I'm assuming Jeff is working on that right now.
I am
and
doing
that's why
my
I am talking and he is not. And I was right.
I'm not real good at the tech stuff.
But Chris, hopefully. Are you there?
I'm here.
Hello, how you doing?
Hey, good, how's it going?
Pretty good. We're on the air. Welcome to Miami Town Ghost Talk, and we're getting Paulette and Dina here.
Awesome.
I seem to have lost track of Dina. Give me one second.
No problem.
Hello.
Hello. You're
How
on
are you?
Miami. Pretty good.
Good.
We're on the air. Welcome to Miami Town Ghost Talk, and we are working on getting Dina on the line here.
Dina's always problems.
What happens when there's a circle with an X in it?
Uh-huh.
Circle with the X? That means...
I'll invite to a conference and see what happens.
Just calling her. You should be good.
Okay.
Excellent. Okay, I apologize. I was busy trying to get everyone on the phone. I'm not really the tech guy. But I'm Jeff.
I think she's on. Are you here,
I'm
Dina?
I okay. am here.
All right.
Excellent. We managed to get everyone on.
Wow.
How is everyone today? Or this evening, I guess?
Doing well, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing very well now that I have everyone on the phone and the tough part of my job is now over.
All right.
So we nice were...
Going with questions.
When we were... before we got you all on the show, we were talking a lot about the ghost box, and we realized that we don't really know a lot about it. We thought we did, but we don't really know a lot about it. Do you know the history of the ghost box, like how it actually got started? Like, was somebody actually sitting there listening to the static on their radio and said, I wonder if that's a ghost talking through there, if that's just another radio?
Wow. That's funny that you ask that. It, only because Chris is the, he's been the main researcher of the device since its inception, basically, since its modern day inception.
Yes, he has. He's been the real researcher.
Yeah.
So you say modern day inception. So there was
there have been other things like in the past, and Chris could probably tell you more about it. Like in I think it was Sweden. There's a book called The Skoll Experiment, and it takes place in the late 70s, I think, or early 70s maybe. Chris would know more about that as well. But it talks about this kind of research in I think Sweden back in the 70s. And so I say modern day because there have been, you know, according to this book, versions of this device made, you know, throughout the years. So I say modern day inception.
It goes way back. It actually started with Edison. Basically, the story behind it was that Thomas Edison was working on a device to communicate with the dead. Reason being, his mother, who was a spiritualist, passed away. He was very close with her. And when she did cross, he started to reexamine some of his views on the afterlife or the potential afterlife and decided that energy could neither be created nor destroyed. It can only change form. If that's being the case, we should be able to have our personalities survive, and we should be able to communicate back and forth between the two worlds. And there's a lot of different debates as to what really took place, but people believe that he either came up with the blueprints or was able to complete the device. We actually found out that he was working with Nikola Tesla on one of these devices a long, long time ago.
Thought they were mortal enemies. I thought that Tesla and Edison wanted nothing to do with one another.
Yeah, they absolutely were enemies, and they started working on this device together because they basically figured that one or two great minds was better than one. And of course, it ended up in disaster. They couldn't work together. So Edison really started working with psychics and was trying to understand how they were able to communicate over untold distances and relay thoughts. And he thought it was like radio waves that they were able to transmit their thoughts that way. So that being said, again, nobody knows if he was able to complete the device or not, but there were large sections of his journal that were missing. And if anybody knows anything about Thomas Edison, they know that He kept meticulous notes on everything that he did. So the belief is that his peers at the time actually destroyed the work that he was doing on the device to protect his reputation after his death. But either way, anyway, jumping ahead in that, there was another project that came about called Spiritcom, where living scientists were working through EVP to communicate with scientists who had crossed over to the other side, and were actually building a communication device which appeared to be successful as they were working on it. But unfortunately, the living scientists got a little bit cocky and decided that they were actually more intelligent than the scientists who had passed, and started to build their own version. And at that point, it completely fell apart. And
like, what year was this? What year are we talking with this? This is a fascinating story. I've never heard this.
Absolutely. It's actually late 70s, early 80s. And there's still tapes that are available online if you have a chance. I encourage anybody to check it out, called Spiritcom. And basically, once that project failed, Frank Sumption actually, through a series of errors more so than anything else, actually started up the next version of the device, and was able to complete the two-way communication device, and actually contacted me back in late 2003, early 2004, and asked me to go out and test this device in the field. And when I first heard it, I didn't think that it worked at all. I dubbed it, along with my father, the Frank's Box, because we couldn't think of another name for it, and actually were able to obtain two-way communication at the Sally House in Atchison, Kansas, and found out that it was a true two-way spirit communication device at that point. And since then, obviously, I've used it ever since.
So how does it work? Okay, I'm sorry, Mike.
Is a Frank's Box the exact same thing as a Ghost Box, or are those two different things?
Well, it's funny. Frank's Box, Frank Sumption is the one who devised it. Again, we labeled it Frank's Box. Then we started using the more proper title of Telephone to the Dead later, because we do that in honor of Edison, the work he was doing on the Telephone to the Dead. But, you know, right when I announced this, I did a radio show called Coast to Coast. And I had been testing the device for several years, and a lot of my peers and counterparts thought I had lost my mind for using this quote-unquote broken radio to communicate with the dead. They thought that I had lost it. And I announced it on Coast to Coast, showed some examples, and pretty soon everybody in the world wanted their own Telephone to the Dead. And as I explained to them, it takes a very specific mediumship ability to not only interpret the messages that come through, but to power the device as well. And when you have true communication, you know what it is. Anyway, everybody in the world wanted one of these things, and we got a lot of quick demand for people that wanted us to mass market the Frank's Box Telephone to the Dead. We explained that it wouldn't work for everyone. So the general public's idea at that point was to kind of create their own. And the first version of that was a thing called the Mini Box. And the Mini Box, while it sounded like a broken radio, had none of the values of an actual Frank's Box or Telephone to the Dead. It just sounded like a broken radio and basically worked like a broken radio. It didn't really give any pure communication. And after people were disgruntled with that, and I think they were paying $400 or $500 a shot on these devices, there was a gentleman who actually decided to get a Radio Shack radio, one of the little handhelds, and pull the mute pin out on this thing. And what it would do is just constantly scan a radio dial. And it got the name Shack Hack. And, you know, these people think, they call them ghost boxes of all sorts of different things, but people assume that because it sounds like a broken radio and scans a dial, that it's just like the Frank's Box or the Telephone to the Dead. But the truth is that the device that I use, the Frank's Box, uses an RVG, a random voltage generator, and spirits are able to use their energy to affect the RVG and pull back and forth, create specific words, create specific voices, and it's a completely different concept than the coined ghost box.
So it's not actually scanning through radio channels like the Shack Hack does?
It scans AM, FM, shortwave, cell, whatever's available in the atmosphere, but it's actually being manipulated through an RVG as opposed to a pin that's being pulled out, and it just scans 2 seconds here, 2 seconds there.
Okay.
So the voices that you hear through this, is this something that this is actually the voice of the ghost, or is this something that the ghost is manipulating the sounds that are, I guess, in the radio waves that are already in the air, and then turning those into the picking and choosing the words that the ghost wants? I guess I'm not sure exactly what's going on here. Are we actually hearing the words of the ghost, or is this?
Well, it's a fascinating process, because when spirits first attempt to communicate with you, and when we do our 102 class and we're able to record a session and then analyze it with everybody there, people kind of understand how it works. In the beginning, and you first make contact with spirits, they'll use all of the fragment that's available to them. They'll manipulate it how they need to. So one word can consist of 10 different fragments that will actually create that one word. And it's like listening to a different type of language that you have to learn. And it's interesting, as spirits are able to use it more often, they're able to manipulate it more. And really, it takes on a quality of their own voice. And it's gotten to the point now when I do private readings for people, they can absolutely hear loved ones' voices distinctly come through and answer their questions.
Okay, so I'm trying to figure out exactly how that would work. So, or exactly what you're trying to say. So when they hear their actual loved ones' voices, do they take actual ambient sounds and somehow manipulate that into that, or are they able to, I guess, speak from their actual voice from, I guess, beyond the grave through the through this machine?
Well, they're definitely, I mean, we're definitely talking about something that has to do with quantum mechanics here, but the fact is that they are definitely manipulating ambient sounds to actually come through and create their own voice. The progression is something that we still have yet to understand. We may never understand, but it definitely does start out extremely remedial, and as they use the device more, they're able to manipulate it to the point where very standard two-way communication takes place.
Okay. Let me try to think of how I want to phrase this. You got a question, Mike?
Yeah, I was muted. I started talking, and no one was hearing me, and I was confused. But so if you had an EVP recorder sitting in the room at the same time you were doing a Frank's Box, Ghost Box, a Telephone to the Dead session, would that recorder pick up the same thing as the box, as you would hear through the box?
It absolutely will. It'll pick up everything that's coming through the device, and there's usually anywhere between 5 to 15 different levels of voice that'll come through. So different spirits will attempt to answer the same question. And when we break that down, we have to actually go through each and every voice. It's amazing to hear the different answers that come through for each and every question. But in the same sense, another interesting thing that Dina and I were just talking about today is that from time to time, while you're doing a Telephone to the Dead session, you'll pick up an EVP inside the room, class A, B, C, R, whatever the case might be, that'll come through and attempt to communicate with you while they're there.
So, like, let's say you were to have this session with just an EVP recorder and not the box, and then you rewound life back to the beginning of that EVP session, took out the EVP recorder, and just put in the box, you would get the same voices on both? The same.
I guess it would depend on the situation. Yeah, it would depend on the situation, but spirits need to know how to manipulate the device before they can use it.
Okay, that clears it up.
So what are the levels of EVPs? We were talking about this a little bit beforehand. Are there official rules, like, when you have tornadoes and you have the F5 tornado, and you can clearly tell when it's an F5 tornado because of the damage that it does? Is there something like that for the class, the lines between class A, class B, class C, class R?
Yeah, when it comes down to the different classifications, it's something that was actually originally developed by AAEVP, which was one of the first groups to kind of classify EVPs. And it's a random, not necessarily scientific way of doing it, But basically what it states is that a class AEVP is something that's so clear that everyone in the room hears it and agrees on what it is without manipulation, that everybody knows exactly what was said. A class BEVP basically states that half of the room will say that it's one thing, half of the room will say it's another. Class C, no one can say that it's not an EVP, but no one can agree on what it is. Of course, a class R EVP is human speech being recorded in reverse. And then, of course, you get the more interesting types of EVP, which are like DERs, direct electronic response, which are probably the most fascinating.
What exactly is that? I'm not sure I've heard of that.
Direct electronic response, it's actually something that we came into contact with in the late 90s. Basically, what it is a response that comes across on your recorder sounding like an electronic scratching or popping in response to questions. And we didn't know what it was for the longest time. We had a lot of this type of EVP. But Todd Bates, who actually owns Haunted Voices now, used to work for us. And we sent him off some of these EVP clips, and he was able to put it into a sound editing software. And once he put it into a sound editing software, he discovered that just one of these sounds, these scratches that would come across, once you stretched it out 30 or 40 times, you actually would have a full paragraph of human speech within that one scratch. So it was the most difficult thing for us to decipher, but the easiest way for a spirit to actually imprint its voice directly onto a recorder.
Huh.
So there is a question in the chat room. I'm kind of going back to where we were before with the whole EVP thing. So why, they were wondering, why would you take something as simple as EVP, where it's just one recorder and that's it, and just asking questions, and put together this seems more complex machinery to communicate with the spirits? Is it for the real-time effect, or is there some other advantage?
Well, I think that there's several different advantages. I mean, it's real time. It's the fact of asking a question and getting a response right then and there. If anybody's done standard EVP work, it's like you're just poking around in the dark, hoping that you're going to grasp something and maybe they might respond to you. It's extremely ineffective as far as trying to do a line of questioning. When you're doing a telephone to the dead session, you ask a question, you get a response, and you move on to the next question. And, you know, as far as cynics and skeptics go, it's probably the most definitive proof we've ever been able to come up with that we're having direct communication. Because when you ask a direct question, looking for a specific answer, and that specific answer is given to the room in real time, it's very hard to go back and say that that was just chance.
Right.
How often does it happen that you actually are able to have these conversations, or is this? I know you mentioned before that if you have these multiple sessions, then the ghosts get more and more familiar with the machinery. They're more and more able to do it. Is it something that? It has that same progression of effectiveness for all locations, or how often does this happen, I guess?
Well, if you're going into a location and you're attempting to communicate with specific spirits, the more familiar you become with them, the more apt they are to answer your questions and come through each and every time. But if we're just calling out literally into, you know, the darkness, into the universe, it's a little bit more work to try to get in touch with spirits and have them come through. So it just really depends.
If you had to come up with a percentage of the times that you've gone out with the telephone to the dead and tried to communicate, and then you actually were able to have a line of questioning that anyone would consider very interesting, what percentage would you say that was?
It would be over 95%.
You said it required a little bit of mediumship. Is that what this is mostly due to?
Oh, absolutely. It's just a medium's tool, and it drives people crazy when I say that. But in all honesty, it is a medium's tool. And what makes it so interesting is that you can have a psychic communicate with a spirit, a good psychic communicate with a spirit and relay answers to you in specific things. But to hear that person, that loved one that you never thought you'd hear from again, come through in their own voice and relay that information, it's invaluable, and it's just one of those things that really gives a lot of people closure. And on the other side of it, to have a victim come through, for instance, a spirit who's crossed, and recount a murder in their own words as it happened, it's just really there's really no value you can put on it. It's just absolutely incredible.
Have you had any personal experiences with this where you communicated with a loved one and was able to hear them? Is that how you got started, or is this something where you kind of do it for other people?
Yeah, I don't try to communicate with my loved ones, and people question that all the time. But
I can excuse me, Chris didn't mean to interrupt, but as Chris's mommy, I can attest that Chris never uses it for his own personal use. He always uses it to help other people. I've experienced times with him when he's actually done readings for people who've had their family commit suicide or children that have died, and it's just amazing, you know, to see these people hear these family members in their own voices and things, such comfort and such closure it gives these people. It's amazing. But Chris never uses this for his own device.
Okay. I wasn't sure if maybe something happened where you were using one and that was kind of where what got you interested, when you heard something that you just couldn't believe because you heard someone that you knew, something like that.
Okay. Well, I've had some interesting things that have happened. I've never necessarily gone to speak with a loved one or a relative or anything like that, but I have had them come through on occasion. I had one where my great aunt came through and gave me a very specific statement that only my family knew, because she was trying to warn me about a business relationship that I was thinking about getting involved with, which was interesting. And my grandfather had actually just passed while I was doing a radio interview on a large FM syndicated station, and he tried to come through to me several times while we were on the air, but the DJ was actually having his own experiences at the time, and I literally had to tell my grandfather that he would have to wait.
There was another question in the chat room, and they were wondering, is the success of this equipment, does it have anything to do with who's operating it or the equipment itself, or is it pretty much solely dependent on whether or not the spirits want to talk? I mean, like, does...
Yeah, I think it's a combination. I think that first off, you have to have a very strong mediumship ability to power and receive from the device. And then I think on the other side of it, you know, the spirits have free will. A lot of people like to think of ghosts and spirits as pets. But the fact is that there are people who've lived and died and crossed and other entities, and they make the decision whether they want to communicate or not. So you can't force anyone into doing this. But, you know, the one thing we've always preached as a magazine and during our Ghost Hunter universities is respect. You know, if you go in with the utmost respect and you tell them what you're going to do with the information and explain to them why you're interested in these things, you know, 99% of the time they're going to come through and answer your questions.
So as, like me, I have no psychic, no medium ability whatsoever that I'm in tune with at all. If I were to try to use this, would the likelihood of it being as successful as, say, you using it much less because I don't have that communication?
From what we've seen so far, and I think that the first indication of that for me was when we were doing the Ghost Hunting Universities first had the device, we were doing demonstrations to the groups that we had. What would happen is I'd be called away from the room every so often, and I'd leave the device running. And by the time I would come back to the room, everyone was like, you know, when you left, it just turned into static and popping, and nobody could hear anything. And I realized at that point that, you know, maybe there was something to this as far as the ability to communicate with spirits in a different medium as well.
Huh. So can you communicate with them without the box? Do you have that mediumship quality?
Yeah, I always have. And my father's a very devout skeptic, so it's something that I tried to keep in the closet for a very long time. But, for me, it's really just about communication at this point. I still approach everything from a scientific standpoint, but I have mixed in the ability to assist in that now.
So how exactly did I guess this question could go to Paulette and Dina as well, but how did everyone get started in this? If your dad was such a skeptic, how did this all get started?
That's a funny story, isn't it, Chris?
Yeah.
Oh, that is funny. I think for myself, just like a lot of other sensitive people, I'm an empath, and as a young child, just as Chris, I started noticing that I had some interesting abilities. Going certain places, I would get feelings about the people, about the place. A lot of history, a lot of things would happen where I could go back in time and I could experience some of the things that had happened in certain historical places. And when I would tell my parents about it, they, of course, being the very conservative people they were, would point blank tell me, don't tell anybody this because they're going to think there's something really wrong with you. So, you know, keep it to yourself. Don't talk about it. And it bothered me for many, many years. And as I got older and I started understanding more and more about it, I understood that it was, in fact, a gift, and I could use it that way. And I could pick up on feelings of people from the past and people in the present. And as I got older and had more and more experiences, and as Chris got to be about 7 years old, I could see that he was experiencing some very different things too. And fortunately or unfortunately, I'm not sure which, I encouraged him, you know, to go with these things and to research and to study and to tell me and explain to me what he was feeling and what he was experiencing. And as I kind of joke in a lot of the GHUs we do, I think I drug him to every haunted house in Capitol Hill, which is the area in Denver that we have that has a lot of history, because I wanted to see what he could pick up and what he could understand and research from this. So we kind of had this scientific experiment going on all of your childhood, I guess, Chris. Is that true?
Yeah, for the most part.
Right. And of course, having Dad, who was, you know, the I don't know what we could call him, the Catholic critic who watched all these things and shook his head and didn't believe. And then as we drug him out and he started experiencing things that he never thought he could, then he started, you know, being, as he calls himself, an open-minded a skeptic. And he's had a lot of very interesting things happen to him. But in the beginning, I think it was just you and I, huh, Kit?
Yeah, in the very beginning, it was definitely just the two of us until he came around a little bit more many years later. So,
right.
And I want to definitely give Dina a chance to jump in here. I know she's been just sitting in the background going, So, yeah, I mean, she's had some pretty intense experiences, at least I know with us, and probably I know there was a couple of things beforehand, too.
So how did you get involved with Chris and Paulette being outside the family and everything?
I first started... Well, our families have known each other for several years, and I first went to a Ghost Hunter University event after my father died, and kind of went, and I mean, honestly, I could make it a really long story, but I'm, you know, it's a longer story than most people probably want to hear, but I got hooked on it, and I had always been interested in the paranormal. I had a very personal experience with the telephone to the dead. Chris had just started to use it at events and asked me to come early and kind of be a guinea pig. I came with several friends, and I heard my father's voice, and all my friends heard my father's voice, and there was screaming and crying, and it was honestly you know, an experience that was life-altering for me. And I think it was at that point that I knew that I wanted to be a part of it, whether it was with the magazine, whether it was with going on investigations, whether it was any of that. So that's kind of how I started in, and have been loving it ever since.
So were you into the paranormal at all before that happened?
Yeah. I mean, I had an interest in it. I would watch, you know, all the shows that I could. It was funny because I wouldn't watch, you know, there was that Unsolved Mystery show hosted by Robert Stack. And my friend, my college roommate and I would never miss a week. And the one thing that we always waited to watch, like, we didn't care about the unsolved murders. We didn't care about, you know, any of that. We always wanted to see the parts that talked about haunted houses. I was fortunate enough to have gotten to see Ed and Lorraine Warren come to my college and speak when I was in college. And so I just had a fascination with it, but never did anything too much about it. So, but yeah, I did have an interest in it. And like I said, I was fortunate enough to have gone to one of these classes and be in, you could call it reintroduced to them. And just, like I said, started working.
So are these Telephone to the Dead sessions recorded when they're, when you do them? I know you mentioned that you heard your father's voice over the box. Is that something that was recorded at the time?
No. This was Chris was first using it. And so I can't say that it was recorded. I think that, I mean, I've had several other things that have come through in, you know, since that have been recorded. And it's interesting because my dad, you know, he does come through in his voice. I know it's his voice because he wasn't from this country. He had a very distinct accent. And it's also the voice of somebody that you're never going to forget. People ask me all the time, well, are you sure it was his voice? And it's like, well, I, you know, yes, I'm sure. How can, you know, why are you doubting what I know?
But this is something that can be scientifically proven, right? They have those things that they can actually take a recording of someone's voice and then prove that it's actually the voice of from another recording.
Well, but see, I don't know about that because it is electronically. I don't know, Kristen, on how you or Paulette, how you could maybe word it. I don't want to say electronically altered, but it's not there. It's not like how you and I don't know, Chris. Can you maybe get into that a little bit more and explain what I'm trying to explain?
Well, I think what she's trying to say is that the voices come through, and obviously it sounds sometimes like it's coming through a tin can. It's not like we're talking right now over Skype. You're never going to get that kind of quality. But, I mean, I would disagree. I think that you probably could go in and actually have it analyzed if you had a recording of that person's voice versus what comes through the device. I think that it absolutely would match up.
I stand corrected.
How would a skeptic argue that? Like what could a skeptic possibly say at that point? And you know that they're out there, and they would.
I'm sure there's a million things. It was pre-recorded. It was. I mean, there's a million things. I just know that when I had that experience, that's all I needed to hear. I mean, you know, you can listen to skeptics. I would say the majority of the skeptics and the cynics are people who. I would even say, what, Chris, 99% of these people are people that have never even met you. They are people that have never even, you know, experienced using the Telephone to the Dead with Chris. Yes, they haven't experienced any of it, and they just want to kind of throw out an accusation or negative talk about it because they don't know any better. And that's on them.
How about the fact that a lot of times during these sessions that certain names come up, family names, pet names, that none of us would have any idea what, you know, what they were, what they meant to these people, but they come up with a certain name that they were called as a child by their grandmother or grandfather, or the name of their dog or something that comes through that only they would know. And, you know, again, with the skeptics, of course, you could know colors, or you could know the type of house they lived in or whatever, but, you know, pet names and personal things that only these people know, you know, that's kind of hard to, you know, argue.
Right, like when Chris was doing the John Jay and Rich show, and it was live on air, and John Jay, I mean, just started crying because he heard something in there when Chris was doing it. He said something like, what was the name of that? It was a nickname.
Yeah, it was a nickname that kept coming through, and he kept asking me, he kept saying, well, okay, if this is real, what's the nickname, what's the nickname? And I kept hearing a clear voice that kept coming through and saying, to me, it sounded like pickles, you know, like pickles out of a jar. And I thought, no, there's no way. So I ignored it, and I kept looking for this new thing. Well, finally, the voice got so loud, and it came through, and it said again what I thought said pickles. And he broke into tears. I mean, he just completely broke down and almost had to leave the booth at that point. And I went back and asked him, said, what exactly took place? And he said that the nickname that he was looking for was Peckles. And that was a name that they had in their family that they used to call their father was Peckles. And, you know, what are the chances of coming through with this name of Peckles on repeated times coming through? It's absolutely impossible. We've had other situations where we sit down and we'll ask specifically for someone, you know, is Dave there? And immediately you'll hear, this is Dave. And we've actually broken down the probability on that, and it's so minute of an actual voice responding directly to your question. It's nearly impossible. But you find out that cynics always have an excuse, a reason. There's something fraudulent taking place. There's some kind of trickery, something along those lines. And, you know, that's really what it's broken down to is once you've proven it to yourself and you've proven it to the people who actually really care about this technology, it doesn't matter. You're never really going to convince a mainline science cynic that this is really happening, period.
Right.
So when you ask a question and you get that direct answer to the question, how long... is it like immediate, like you ask it and then there's that answer, or do you sometimes have to wait a few seconds for something to come through and then assume that the first thing to come through is the answer to the question?
Well, again, it depends on the situation. The majority of the time when spirits actually will relay answers, it's nearly immediate. And it's not just a random word or a random... something that could be out there that could just be an answer to anything. It's always a specific answer to your question, and it's not just yes and no.
Jeff, I got a clip from one of their sessions. Do you want to play that?
If that's okay with them, I would
love to hear one of these.
Yeah.
And actually, the clip that I'm sending, let me just tell you what it's about really quick. It was actually... in an investigation that we did with a local radio station, KHOW FM, and really popular AM station, and every year they go to, you know, Halloween time, they go to a famous haunted location around the state of Colorado, and they spend the night there, and they invite groups to come do an investigation. Well, one of the people who decided to stay with us and our group during the investigation was the sound engineer. His name is Kenny Dannon, and he's with KHOW. And what fascinated us, and Paulette can attest to this, is that he was able to clearly hear what was coming through the telephone to the dead as it was coming out. And I think it truly has to do with the fact that his ears are so in tune with picking out fragments, because that's what he does for a living. That, I mean, it was interesting. And like I said, Paulette, you had that experience there with me.
Exactly. It was amazing that he could pick up on it. But, you know, not everybody can do that, just like Dina said. But his ear is so trained. And I think Chris does it so well, too, because he was a musician. Well, he is a musician. And I think that there's a certain, I don't know, frequency or clarity or something that they hear that a lot of people don't.
Okay, let's hear that clip then.
All right, I'm going to play it now.
Any spirit that's with us tonight know any of us that are down in this room?
Denver? No.
Okay, and what that said was, and you know, so I can explain it, is that, and I do have to preface and say that that also has been cleaned up because, you know, we had to send that back to the radio station. And so it's accurate, it's very accurate, but it, I had to, you go in, when you go in and you edit what you're listening to, you have to try to cut back on the hisses and the clicks and the static. So it has been cleaned, it has not been edited in any other way than that. And what that says was, is there anybody in this room that knows anybody down here? The answer is Kenny, which is Kenny Dannon, who I told you about. And then it says, I used to live by him. And Kenny says, here in Denver? And it says, no. And there's a second part to that clip, which, you know, I can send if you want me to, but it says, Kenny says, in Iowa? And it says, that was me. So it was an interesting two-way conversation that Kenny Dannon with KHAL Radio was having with this particular spirit on that particular night. And, you know, like I said, it was just fascinating to all of us.
Let me play it one more time, see if I can hear which ones are which.
Any spirit that you've put up tonight know any of us that are down in this room?
Hey, I just live by
here in Denver? No.
Oh, yeah, I heard that clearly.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's great. I mean, to me, when we get stuff like that, I mean, that's just wonderful. Are there days where we really have to struggle to, you know, hear what's coming through? Yeah, definitely. We had a great experience this past Halloween season with another radio station, The Fan, with Scott Hastings. And, he got some interesting there were some interesting things that happened there, and I thought he was going to turn white on that very first, you know, no, or whatever he got from that. But, you know, it's great when we get things that come out that well, and more importantly, when the people who are with us can hear it like that. It's really a special thing.
All right.
I know that I tried out, or Caper, the group that Mike and I are with, we had a Frank's box. I don't know if it was officially a Frank's box or if it was one of those radios that they just took out the thing, and it was just a bunch of radio stations coming in and all that. I'm sorry, what?
I think it was the Shack Hack.
Okay, but we were sitting there just to try it out to see what it was all about, and we were sitting in this supposedly haunted house, and we asked how many people are here. There were four of us sitting there, and one of the radio stations, I guess, that it picked up, there was clearly a voice on there that said five. And we were kind of starting to make fun of it. Well, that's not really, there's only four of us here, you're wrong. And then somebody said, wait a second, if somebody's speaking through the Frank's box, I guess there really are five people here. But still, it's weird that a number would come through. Like, we didn't hear another number for the rest of the night, but when we asked the question of how many, it was just kind of weird. And I'm not sure what to make of that or if that means anything at all, but it just struck me as kind of interesting.
Yeah, most definitely interesting.
So you guys don't. You guys also do a magazine, Haunted Times magazine. Did you want to kind of promote that? I guess, tell everyone what that's all about.
Yeah, I'll let Dina talk about that one.
Okay.
Oh well, I guess I'll talk about it. Haunted Times magazine has been in print since Chris and his dad got together to do that back in 2006. 2006?
Actually, 2004.
Oh, wow. All right. No, because, I mean, in print. It was it 2004 in print?
We went into business in 2004, and we were online for a year. We went to print in October 2005.
That's what I thought. Okay. So, went to print in 2005. We were just named the best paranormal magazine in the world from the International Paranormal Acknowledgement Awards. Chris was actually also named the top male ITC and our real-time communication researcher in the world as well by that same international award group. And we are found at hauntedtimes.com. People can purchase a subscription there. $28. Actually, that's our special. If you go to the website, I believe it's $33.50. Just click on the subscribe today, or get more information about the magazine. We're a quarterly magazine, and we focus on everything from hauntings, cryptozoology. People have told us that we should probably change our name to Paranormal Times, but we like Haunted Times. It suits us pretty well. And like I said, there's just kind of no holes barred. We just focus on everything that's outside that proverbial box of what people consider normal. And we love what we do, and every ounce of what we have goes into it. We have an awesome staff of writers that are really all over the world. All of our writers are volunteer. They send in their stories to our literary director, and if they get chosen, that's great. But like I said, we have a wonderful staff that is literally all over the world. And we are really blessed to have gotten as far as we have, and certainly wouldn't have been able to do it without Dennis and Paulette, and obviously Chris. And it's just been a great ride so far.
Do you accept submissions from other people for articles as well, or is it all?
Oh
through?
Yeah. Oh no! Okay. Anybody who would like to submit an article, they are welcome to submit it. Every article is subject to copy editing, just for spelling, grammar, making sure things sound right. But
right.
We accept submissions from anybody.
Cool.
So, are you thinking of writing an article, Mike?
No.
You were just asking. You're thinking about it. You're gonna be sending articles in there until they publish it.
Nope.
Well, and the other thing is that we have a lot of people that, like you guys, I know you published your book about hauntings in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, not just people that write stories, but we get a lot of authors as well who either send in little excerpts from their books or certainly advertise. We are always looking for advertisers, people who want to advertise their books, their anything, their ghost tours, their whatever they do that is outside that box, like I said, that proverbial box of what people consider normal. So keep us in mind. We have great pricing.
All right. And the website is hauntedtimes.com.
HauntedTimes.com, yep. You can also, if you have any questions about the magazine, about subscriptions, about even advertising, you could definitely shoot me an email. I'm Dina, and I am d.everling@comcast.net, and I can go ahead and put it into the chat room as well. So feel free to get in touch with me, and I can answer any questions you might have.
All right.
Do you guys have any other events or anything that are coming up? We are starting to run low on time, and I don't want to anything that you wanted to promote or tell us about.
Why, yes, we do.
always.
We travel all over the place. I think the next event that Chris actually has coming up is he's going to be speaking at a conference in Canada called Ghosts, Paranormal and conference and marketplace type thing. That's in Canada, St. Catharines, Ontario, I believe. And that's May 14th, 15th, and part of the 16th. And the 21st of May, Chris is going to be going to the Villisca Axe Murder House to do an investigation there, and followed right up by the Mason House Inn in Vinceport, Iowa. So it's going to be a piggybacked Iowa weekend for Chris and the gang. And boy, they can't wait. But Villisca is going to be interesting. And Mason House is always fascinating. We get a lot of great stuff from the Mason House, too. And like I said, Villisca is a creepy axe murder house. And boy, that one's going to be good, too. So you can check out our website for all of our current events. It has a specific part on there that says upcoming events. And again, it's www.hauntedtimes.com. Or again, you can give us a call to get registered for any of these events or for any information. We do have an 800 number. It's 877-880-6232.
All right.
Excellent. Real quick, Chris, did you want to say anything in reply to what they were talking about in the chat room? He was saying that the evidence collected from that would not be considered proof by the scientific community.
Sure, absolutely. The only thing I wanted to say about that is, you know, in most cases, I would agree with that, because the majority of the scientific community is very, very much interested in keeping status quo, which is fine. We understand that. But if you look into the Mason House Inn website, which I put into the chat room there, one of my biggest skeptics in the beginning was the owner of that property, and it turns out that he was one of the – he's actually a quantum physicist who was one of the top-ranking Air Force officials in the government who actually owns that property, and it took me a long time to find that out. But he is now one of the biggest proponents of the device being able to actually communicate with spirits in real time and get specific answers that no one else would ever know.
So do you think there will ever come a time when it will be accepted by the scientific community and be a...
I believe when the transition takes place, absolutely. I think when everything switches over, they're not going to have much choice. But up until that point, I think that everyone wants to keep it fairly status quo, just as it is now. Yeah. It's easier to accept things that way.
Okay. All right.
So did Edison, like, I don't know where if I'm making this up, if this was a dream I had or something, but did Edison on one, like on an early phonograph recording capture an EVP? Is this some famous story or something, or?
They've actually, yeah, several of the people who've actually collected EVPs were some of the first people to actually use new technology. When radio was first created, before there was actual communication and receiving from towers, they were actually picking up voices of spirits that were coming through, and that is documented. Edison did collect his own EVPs. Radev, of course, was one of the top researchers at the time. He was actually working with bird sounds and was bird watching and started collecting the voices of disembodied spirits. So, surprise, surprise on that one.
And wasn't Marconi another scientist who was dabbling in the telephone to the dead? He was working on that too, along with Tesla.
Yeah, absolutely. So many of the great minds were working on this communication.
Okay. Well, we are running low on time. Did you have anything else that you guys wanted to say before I let you go?
Well, thank you so much for the interview and for the opportunity.
Well, thank
absolutely.
You so much. Thank you so much for coming on this.
Definitely.
Whenever Mike and I used to sit at the dinner table at night, my dad would always ask us, "What did you learn today?" And I feel that I actually learned something today, and I am a smarter person today than I was earlier today, or after the show than I was before the show. And
well, I'm glad I could be of help.
but thank you guys for coming on.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
All right. Should we go to commercial and then come back and end the show?
We can do that. You want to take us out or would you like me to?
I'd like you to, because I need to find a commercial real quick.
All right, you guys, you have been listening to Miami Town Ghost Talk on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network. We'll be back.
Join the crew from NKYPS for Paranormal Outreach Radio every Wednesday night, kicking off the Paranormal Powerhouse lineup. Mike, Matt, and Crystal turning up the heat with a variety of guests from the paranormal community. There'll be fun, laughter, and a bit of information dealing with the paranormal issues. Join us every Wednesday night on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network.
States that the paranormal activity has been around for many years. Recently, since the new millennium, it seems it has been on the rise. We at Tri-State Paranormal are here to help people with their fears and their concerns. We don't charge for our services. If you feel like you have some strange activity going on in your home, please give us a call. Or go to our website at www.tspnorthernkentucky.com. We're here to help you.
This is Matt from Kafer, and you're listening to Miami Town Ghost Talk.
And we're back. So, do you feel as though you understand what the ghost box is a little better now?
I have a much clearer understanding of what the ghost box is. But I don't know. I think I'd have to see it in action a little more to more completely understand. But yeah, definitely better than what I knew at the beginning of the show.
Yes, I agree. I feel the same way. I thought it was nothing more than broken radio. Oh yeah, did we have a what happened this day in history factoid for the day?
Oh, we
did. It's too late for the contest.
It is too late for the contest.
Yes.
Did anybody guess anyway?
No.
Well, today in history, since it was a science show, this is a science fact, but on this day in history in 1902, Marie Curie isolates radium. So I guess radium was discovered on April 20th of 1902.
Okay, then.
Yeah,
real, cool.
Real fascinating, real interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why we didn't have the contest this time.
Well, I can go through what's coming up next. Next week we have Brian from the Ohio Paranormal Convention. I think that's what it's called.
Is that the one that we went to last year up in Dayton?
Yeah, it's one of them. We went to two last year, and this was one of them. I think it was the bigger one at the big ice skating place.
Yeah, the Hera Arena.
Yeah, that's it.
Up in Dayton.
He's the one that ran that, and it sounds like it's a lot bigger this year than last year, and I think they have a guest from GHI there speaking, a vendor, speaker. And sounds like a really cool crowd. So
what's he talking about when he comes on? He's just about his ghost hunting group, or about, are they having another convention coming up?
They have another convention this year coming up pretty soon, I think. I think it's in like somewhere between May and July. I don't know the exact date, but he'll be talking about the event. What he does, you know, what we always do, just whatever comes up. And then May 4th, we're going to be talking to Robbie Thomas. He is not the singer, he's a psychic detective, a psychic investigator that helps solve crimes using his psychic abilities.
That sounds
and lately he's been a very hot topic in the community.
But yeah, you should get working on that database that I was talking about earlier.
I'm no good at databases. That's a job for web guy.
Get your wife to do it. She does databases, doesn't she?
She doesn't know programming that well. She knows it, but not that well.
But imagine a site like that where all these different paranormal groups can anonymously give their findings, and they all be put into spreadsheets and graphs and stuff like that. So you can just get this clearer understanding of how often these things occur, are occurring with different groups, and it should all be anonymous, like or people would showboat and say they got this, they got this, they got this. It should all be anonymous, and then some way to kind of, I guess verify to an extent some of the findings, like they need to send some of the findings in or something like that. But I think a database like that could do the field some good. I've given up on the scientific community.
I think you're right, but that would be a whole lot of work for someone to do, and still probably not get the the response out of it that we deserve. The web guy said he'll do it. He said, "What is it? Send me an email."
But imagine that resource out there, and if there are enough resources out there like that, like I've given up on I probably just said this, but I've given up on the multi-million dollar grant from the scientific community and mm-hmm. and all that. But let's take baby steps. Let's get a database together. Let's get that information. Let's get that data that we can give to the scientific community and say, hey, we're collecting data here. This is our findings so far. And if you want to give us multi-millions of dollars, then feel free. We will accept it.
Uh-huh. I think it's a good idea. But finding someone who's willing to do all that work for possibly no reward, that will be the hard part.
But it is the reward. You would be the center of the paranormal world as everyone submits their findings to this database. So, okay. So we've gone over. So we should probably.
We always run over.
Yeah, we should probably quit.
Yeah. I guess. Yeah. All right. So it was a great show. Visit us at MammyTownGhostTours.com. Take a tour.
So is Web Guy really putting the database together?
I don't know.
If he really puts it together, I will promote it every show I go on, every time I'm on the show, and I will promote that and make sure that all those ghost hunters out there submit their findings to this database anonymously, and we can get... Just imagine that. Like, I didn't think this was actually possible, but if he's actually gonna do this, and yeah, he does need a government grant, and if he's actually gonna do this, this could work out really cool.
Talk to him about it. He's much smarter than I am when it comes to doing that sort of thing. He would be much more likely to be able to do it.
Okay.
So, yeah. And it sounds like it'd be real easy for him. It's just a form, and the database would be self-generating. And
am I the only one in the world who thinks this is a wonderful idea?
I think it's a good idea, but I don't think it's going to advance the field. I don't think anyone's going to accept it even still, but that's just...
Well, I'm not saying that they'll necessarily accept it, but us in the field, we will know that this is how we log our sites, or we log our findings. Like, how many... What percentage of times do we go out? Do we get a viable EVP? What percentage of times do we go out? Do we get a viable photograph? What percentage of times do we get out? Do we get some video evidence, or does something move, or personal experiences, and once we get that, and then we'll start to see patterns. And when we start to see patterns, we start to get proof. And when we start to get proof, we can actually figure out exactly what it is that we're working with here. And it just seems that everything's so scattered, and people aren't working together enough. While there are thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, or millions of people out there who do this, it's just everybody's doing it separately, and yeah, when they get something big, they'll share it, or they'll share it. But usually, when it's not anonymous, people will sometimes, I don't know, something just doesn't seem the same. It's just everything anonymous. All these little facets just going into this database, and then somehow people are able to grab some sort of pattern out of this and figure out what's going on here.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a great idea.
You weren't even listening, were you? You were typing in the chat room. No. And
I was listening, but I still don't think you're going to get... I don't know.
I'll figure out how to get people interested in it. I'm not saying that the scientific community is going to... But I like the idea. That's my new thing.
Alrighty. Well, we'll check with you and Web Guy next week to see the progress and see what's happening with it. And until then, join us next week, same time, same channel, and I think we're ready to close it out.
Okay, you've been listening to Miami Town Ghost Talk on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network.
Good night.
Been listening to Miami Town Ghost Talk on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network. Tune in next week for the best radio show that you have ever heard.